Ooh, mind the new microphone.
Careful.
Cheers. It's tea this time.
Ching, ching.
Did
yeah.
We overdid it a couple of days ago. Were we celebrating something?
No.
We're just...
being alive.
Celebrating Tuesday. What time is it?
It is 8:05.
Ooh, hang on. Give us a minute. Washing machine's going on. Dishwasher's going on. I'll be back in a second.
I say Mallorca and you say Majorca. I say
Majorca
and you say
Mallorca.
Mallorca, Majorca, Mallorca, Majorca. Let's call the whole thing off.
See, that was happy hour. Well, happy 2 hours anyway.
It's happy hour now, Ollie.
It's happy hour now.
Until 10.
As the House Martin said, only more tunefully.
But do you know what it is?
I do. I'm running my life by it now.
I know. I wonder if the listener knows what it is. If you don't live in Mallorca, maybe you don't know about happy hour, but we have our electricity provider does a deal where you have 2 hours a day for free of electricity, and we are taking advantage of it because, well, apart from being frugal types anyway, electricity has gone through the roof.
Scottish.
It's gone through the roof.
It has. Something since the new year seems to have...
They have... Endesa has increased the bills by, I think it's a whopping 25%.
It's enormous, isn't it? Just the sort of thing you want to lay on a country with a recession, frankly. So
it seems really silly. I don't understand the rationale behind it, because surely oil prices haven't gone up.
No, they haven't, no. But probably what has gone down is the number of customers that they've had. As businesses have remained shut, restaurants are shut, shops are shut, they probably haven't got anywhere near the money coming in. So they've put electricity bills up, which is nice.
Cheers, boys.
I know, it's awful, actually. I mean, really, they were always quite expensive here, but they've really gone up now. So your 2 hours of free electricity, I sit here in the dark with a jumper and my fingerless gloves around a candle until 8 o'clock, and then suddenly everything's on.
Well, I'm going to say that I do think you're quite funny about it, but also I appreciate your dedication to saving money.
I'd rather, as part of its point of principle as well, I'd rather have the £4 in my pocket than the electricity company. So have some of that, Endesa.
And whilst the bills are going up, the speed limit is going down.
Controversy upon controversy.
Controversy?
Well, I thought I'd get both pronunciations in.
Just in
controversy
case.
On controversy. This week, as the Via Cintura, which is the kind of bypass, the ring road around Parma. Not quite a ring road, because half of it would be in the sea. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's it used to be actually quite a lot of fun, because the speed limit was 120 kilometres an hour, which was a little bit like the wacky races, and they've it was. But they brought it down now to 80 kilometres an hour, which is crunching. Frankly, it's crunchingly slow.
It's not that bad. Have you been on the Via Cintura since?
Only changed? A little bit.
Well, I go on the Via Cintura every day, and it's just moving along at a stately pace.
It's a good idea. The thinking behind it was that it uses less fuel, which is true, and use less fuel, less pollution, less noise. Tires make a lot less noise on there. And also, if everyone's racing around 120, then it's all stop, start, and jump on the brakes. If everyone's tootling around at 80, then...
That's what I think.
It just makes everything smoother.
But a lot of people have also said that it's a bit dangerous to reduce the speeds from 120 to 80 in one go.
There have been a lot of people moaning about it. I think it'll be fine. People get used to it. And also, I did a bit of maths.
Oh, yeah.
I applied science to this.
Oh, dear.
At 120 kilometres an hour, it's only 15 seconds a kilometre faster than if you're going at 80. So if you do the whole Via Cintura at 80, it'll cost you about 2.5 minutes.
Right.
Which we can live with, frankly. If that makes it all a bit safer.
It's not, to be honest, how often do we go all the way around the Via Cintura?
Not very often.
Not very often.
Not many people do, I don't think, do they?
You know what I've noticed on the school runs recently? There aren't many people on the roads end of.
No.
There is really not that many people out there.
Lots of people.
We've got a lot of people working from home, I guess.
And a lot of things just not open. You know, the big shops still remain closed. The ones over 700 square metres, is it? Unless it's a big supermarket, they can stay open. But most of the electrical shops and the Decathlons and the shopping centres and stuff.
I saw Decathlon open the other day.
Was it? Yes. They're open. You can click and collect on these things. You can order it online and go and collect it from the door.
Yeah.
So I think there's just fewer people working in these shops as well.
The only thing I'm missing, really, really missing, is being able to go and get a coffee and sit in a cafe. And stare out the window for 20 minutes.
I think so. I'm missing my morning coffee because the bars are closed as well.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of them anyway, you can get a takeaway coffee.
But it seems to be having the effect that we needed to have on the coronavirus cases.
It does. I mean, cases are declining right the way across Spain, including the Balearics. It still remain pretty high. Actually, that's not right the way across Spain. There's two places.
Where?
Now you've got me. Asturias, I think, somewhere else on the mainland.
They're high in Asturias.
They are not decreasing.
Oh.
And also Ceuta and Melilla, which are the two enclaves in North Africa. But they're very small. So, you know, small. They're kind of, and you have to be careful saying this, they're kind of like Spain's Gibraltar. In the bits of Morocco. I probably shouldn't have said that.
No.
They're bits of Spain that's sort of surrounded by Morocco.
Of you, Ollie.
I know. So, but they're very small. They're very small one horse towns, really. So if the horse gets it, it bumps up the average. If that might be stretching the analogy slightly too far.
Okay. Well, that's good because hopefully next weekend, the 15th of February. No, not next weekend. The weekend after next, the 15th of February, maybe they'll start to loosen up the restrictions a bit, and maybe I'll be able to go for a coffee again.
Yes, well, we'll see. It's I think they're on 2 week rolling kind of renewals of these things.
I'm going to have a lockdown birthday.
I think so. I had one last year as well.
Am I going to get a clownogram?
That's true. I have to think something.
You tell the listener about the clownogram, please.
I think we have mentioned it in the past, but I'll mention it again. I got a
Geordie the clown. Oh, I love it.
Did me a little personalised version of Bring Me Sunshine on a ukulele. It was great.
He was great.
I know.
He was heartbreakingly great, wasn't it? Because we've been locked in the house for like more than a month by that point, and
this was my birthday last April.
Yeah.
So it was
perfect.
Anyway, sticking with coronavirus, been a bit of a local shenanigans actually about dignitaries who may be in the flush of health.
Dignitaries. Like local politicians.
Yeah, the big knobs locally. Getting...
Like mayors.
Mayors, bishops.
Bishops.
All of that sort of stuff.
The bishop?
May have been jumping the queue for vaccine slightly. What? Yeah.
But isn't God going to protect him and everything?
Well, let's not start down that road. But, there were, instead of it being purely clinical, it appears... You know, like in the UK, for instance, it's vulnerable people over a certain age, and it's frontline health workers, and blah blah blah, and it's as a list. But there have been a few, at least rumours of perfectly fit mayors in their 40s.
Who's spreading these rumours?
Opposition politicians.
Oh, well then.
So it may just be some politics. But the Balearic Health Minister, Patricia Gomez, she said that queue jumping would not be tolerated, and they would have to answer to her.
Oh, really?
So I don't know how scary she is, but I guess we'll find out.
I would love to know that the vaccine rollout has really begun, but it's a bit slow here, isn't it?
It is slow. It's slow across Europe because of the way that AstraZeneca. There are more than one vaccine available, but the European Union has not covered itself in glory when it came to procuring vaccines in comparison to the UK.
They were 3 months slower than the UK.
They were. I mean, it's complicated because the UK basically chucked a load of money at it before they were ready. It was a gamble that Britain took, and it paid off, you know.
From what I've heard, though, it was a very educated gamble, though, Ollie. Because
yes, it was.
Britain has got a lot of good connections into those fields, and there was a very educated gamble.
It was a gamble, but it was an educated gamble. No, I said a gamble.
Yeah, I know that. Hmm. But what I'm trying to say is that the EU shouldn't have had the problem with that, making a decision as well. Took them 3 months more to come to the same conclusion.
I suppose they were the difference between the EU and the UK was the UK was willing to take an educated risk, and the EU was less open to taking a risk. And as a result, it's ended up with effectively being second in a queue to
and
a number
also,
of the vaccines.
A diplomatic hoo-ha, like you wouldn't believe, over the border of Northern Ireland and Ireland.
The European Union made a massive mistake. They tried to invoke Article 16 of the Northern Ireland Agreement, which effectively was there as it was put into the withdrawal agreement as a nuclear option in case something went really wrong, and basically puts a border up between the Republic of Ireland, which is in the EU, and Northern Ireland, which is part of the UK. And it was designed, and the European Union said, right, we're going to invoke Article 16 which was going to stop vaccines from crossing that border. So it was basically putting a border up. But they did it without talking to
the
Dublin
Irish
government, the Northern Ireland Assembly in Belfast, or the British government. They had, it's fair to say, they had absolutely no real appreciation of the politics and what that would involve.
What a cock-up.
Yeah,
been talking about for the last 4 years.
I know, but they did. I mean, it was pointed out to them pretty rapidly that this was not a good thing, and they backed out of it. But not before the reputational damage was done. I have to say that's it's not done them any favours. Well, but they have. I mean, look, if you make a mistake, the thing you need to do is admit it and back out of it, which is what they did.
But what an interesting day that must have been when Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland suddenly agreed on something. You know,
yes.
Everybody was like, no, don't think so.
Well, look, it's, you know.
I think that's interesting how they kind of they got it together as a group.
And it is particularly interesting, isn't it? Because the negotiators in the European Union, while they're negotiating Brexit deal, the Northern Ireland situation was one of the major sticking points.
Exactly.
So you would have thought that people within the European Union were fully aware of the fact that this was a sensitive issue. But maybe they were on their lunch when someone else made the decision. But it was not good. Anyway.
So we're still waiting for our elder people in Mallorca to fully receive the benefits of vaccination. And apparently they say that it's going to take up to 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, it's this delay that the European Union's had, but basically it's not got... It ordered, was it 100 million?
I don't know how many.
It ordered a set number of doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine, and AstraZeneca, for reasons it hasn't really been able to adequately explain, aren't making as much, as many.
Machine.
Yeah, but they've sent inspectors in to the factories to say, are you telling us the truth?
Mm.
Not sure. So
no, I know this story because I was listening to it on the news, and the inspectors have been in, and there is a production problem.
Right, okay. So the European Union is a long way short. It's got fewer than half of the doses it ordered. And obviously, the way it seems to be working at the moment is... you're not really going to be able to start opening up your economies until the most vulnerable people in society have been vaccinated. So
February, March, April, the end of April.
Yeah, so basically...
You might have another lockdown birthday. No, surely not.
Well, see, I'm not sure it's about lockdown. I think it's mostly about saying, right, all the shops open, all the bars open, get back to work. And more importantly, for places like the Balearics, welcome tourists, which is, you know...
You're going to miss Easter again.
Well, if we haven't got a significant chunk of the most vulnerable people in the Balearics vaccinated, then effectively it's not really a safe place for people in the UK to come and visit.
The actual thing you're really worrying about is Germans and all the other people that won't have been receiving the vaccine at the same speed as the British.
Yeah.
The British are way ahead on this now, aren't they?
It does seem to be. So, I mean, it is a problem that wherever you are, whether you're the destination, like the Balearics, or the place that the visitors come from, unless you've got a significant chunk of the most vulnerable people vaccinated, then you haven't really got a summer season. At least you can't open up fully. And the problem here is that in order to make it viable for most of the tourist businesses to open, they need the full season. It's no good for them saying, right, we'll open for a month, because these hotels are mothballed, the staff in many cases have been laid off, so it's a big... And they need to be full-ish.
Yeah.
80, I don't know the figures exactly, but probably 80, 85% full. That's before they even cover their costs. So half a season is not much better than no season.
I read in the paper today the Hotel Federation's already saying that half of the island's hotels won't open this summer coming.
Yeah, I think that might be a strategic move, actually. I know last year some of the big hotel groups were negotiating with each other. There's no point having 10 hotels open if they're all running under capacity when you could say, well, let's shut 5 of them and then the other 5 will make a profit. So I think it's a long way from certain that this will be a good year. Yeah, it's too much up in the air. But and there was a bit where we read this week that the numbers from last year were horrific in terms of
the
reduction. I can't find
it. Wasn't it 13 million, 13 point something million visitors normally would come to the island? And last year we got 1.3.
It was 13.6 million, actually, in 2019, which was effectively a normal year, or I guess at least not far off average year. Last year, just 1.7 million tourists came to the Balearics, drop of 87%. I mean, that's a disaster, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we knew it was a disaster, but the numbers are pretty shocking, to be honest.
And that's a difference of billions and billions into the local economy. Yeah. So, well, we need a season. I mean,
we need a season.
We do. There was a couple of businesses, one of the big hotel chains, the Meliá Group, was saying that a second poor summer is existentially bad for a lot of them. Probably not the billionaire hotel owners.
But everybody, surely.
Yeah.
Even though we're not, we don't work in the tourist industry directly, everybody benefits. It's like a cyclical economy, isn't it? It's like everybody benefits when the tourists or visitors are here, whether they're second homeowners or they come here for their week long holiday in the sun. It's really, really affects everybody. So,
I mean, if there's a 10 billion hole in the local economy, you're going to notice it at some point. You know, that's going to be whether your local cafe that you like going to is shut down because the tourists aren't there, or the waiters aren't earning the money to be able to go to the coffee shop or whatever. I mean, it's enormous.
I was doing a report today for a client who has some houses, and I was checking through all of the estate agents that these houses are registered with, and seven of the estate agents out of the 20 estate agents that the houses are listed with aren't in business any longer.
The estate agents, right. Yeah, wow, 20. Yeah.
Seven out of 20. Yeah, blimey. I mean, they were all small businesses. They were all nothing. They weren't like the big guys like Engel and Volkers or First Mayor, but they were all small estate agents, but they're not in business anymore.
Yeah, and it's, well, we shall see what happens this summer. I mean, there was a bigger business here announced a restructuring, a downsizing, Sonamar, which is a really famous attraction here. It's great. It's right in the middle of the island, and it's a dinner show in a traditional style, but with a modern twist. It's one of those places where, you know, that Spain's had for years, where you get your tourists up and you put them in the bus and you...
It started as a paella flamenco show.
Yeah, one of the, you know, those things. But when you used to come here in the 80s for drinking sangria and pie.
I used to work for the
people
that own Sonamar. It's Margaret and Tony and the Whitaker family. And it was erroneously reported, actually, that they'd laid off all of their staff. And Margaret, quite rightly, was really upset about that because it's not the sort of thing that she would ever do.
No.
They have a big staff team. A lot of the staff that never even got onto contract last year because they didn't open. So there was like, I don't know, about 100 waiters and chefs and performers and all sorts of different types of people that go into making.
I mean, it's
business.
A slick operation, you know. At the given hour, all the tourist buses from around the resorts arrive, and everybody's disgorged and off to go to their seats, and they sit down. You get a full 3-course meal. You know, so
good one. It used to be quite lousy until Margaret took over, actually, and it improved a lot.
There's an army of chefs and waiters and barkeepers, and then there's the performers and the rest of it. It's a really cool show, and it updates every year. It's a great experience. But, they didn't open last year because they need the numbers. And I think Margaret was looking at this year and thinking, well, perhaps we're not going to have a slow start or no season at all. Yeah, carry on.
So all of these people didn't even get onto contract last year, but they've still got 54, they're still employing 54 people, even though they're not taking any money in. Can you imagine how difficult that is?
Yeah.
Even if they're all on a minimum wage, that's a lot of money to be paying out every month. And all the people that aren't getting paid that are on Earth Day, which is the furloughed pay.
Yeah, it's a government support.
She's been supporting them with food parcels and with donations, just because the government, in her opinion, and a lot of other people's opinions, the government isn't doing enough for these people.
No.
So good on you, Margaret.
Margaret is the owner of that. She's also the founder of Slimming World in the UK, and she said she's been using her businesses in the UK to sort of cross-subsidise a little bit to keep Sonamar going.
Yeah.
So she's done everything she could. So, Yeah, yeah. They're effectively mothballing and ready. And so she said that when they're ready to open up, they'll be better than ever. So
I was there in August last year. They're redeveloping an area in Sonnemar in the grounds, because Sonnemar itself is a big old mansion house. It is really, really beautiful, traditional Mallorquin mansion, and it has got most spectacular grounds, beautiful, beautiful gardens, and some really interesting buildings. We should go there one day when they're ready to reopen and go and do an on-location podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it there. I think it's great.
So talking about business and Mallorca and the lengths that business people are having to go to survive, Ollie, you went to speak to a guy who is a business broker.
Richard Craig, he buys and sells businesses and a business advisor. We spoke last week to Glenn, who helped us discuss 2 weeks ago, wasn't it, about moving here. But Richard is a real example of someone who's helped to sell people businesses, people moving here from the UK and from other countries as well. So he gives us the lowdown on what you've got to do, what the market's like, and, well, the future. And he's full of optimism, which is nice to hear. So would you like to have a listen?
Let's go for it.
All right, so here we are with Richard Craig from, I'll get this right, Greenpoint Commercial Property.
Yes, that's me.
Now, from our last episode, we spoke to Glenn about what it's like to move here with kids, and following on perfectly is Richard, who well, you'll tell me, but buys and sells businesses, helps people who want to buy businesses on the island. So if you're thinking about moving here, he's your man to talk to. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your business and you and your background and how you've been doing it?
Okay, well, yeah, I run a company called Greenpoint Commercial. We're based here in Mallorca, but we sell businesses and hotels across the Balearics predominantly, although I do have a few things in the mainland now. And yeah, I mean, we work with quite a wide range of international clients that are looking to move or invest in Mallorca. And, you know, we do everything from, you know, the little businesses in Magaluf right up to sort of huge five-star hotels. And we, you know, cater for everyone, really. And yeah, I mean, that's what we do as a business. So we've been launched. I launched the business over a year ago, and it's been going okay.
And how is it now? Is there a rush of people coming to try and move here, or is it backing off a little bit with the?
We're still getting a lot. Quite a good amount of inquiries from quite a lot of, well, internationally they're coming in from. There's lots of people. I think the coronavirus has made them, the people that were thinking about moving, should we say, over to Mallorca now, it's pushed them in the direction of, yes, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
It's just a case of how they get here at the moment. It's funny, isn't it? The tricky bit.
When I moved over here, I remember seeing a stat talking about the amount of people who were thinking about it versus the amount of people who actually took the step to get a one-way ticket. You know, so there's a lot of people just teetering on that, you know, that side of thinking about it, and they just...
I speak to those people every day.
Yeah, I bet. And coronavirus and Brexit's probably been that little shove that a few people need just to...
Yeah, it definitely has. Definitely. I mean, we had a lot of inquiries from the Brits, obviously, coming up to Brexit. And you know, we're getting, you know, lots of different nationalities. They're stuck in Germany, they're stuck in wherever they are in the world. And, you know, it's cold, it's wet, and, you know, it's 20 degrees and sunny here.
It's lovely,
why wouldn't you want to move here? So
it's worries. 4th of February, I had the aircon in the car yesterday. It was lovely.
Yes. So, the weather, the obviously the sports facilities, the location, you know, Mallorca is a beautiful place. And, you know, so we are getting, you know, so still lots of people want to move here and start a new life here, or dream of starting a new life here. You
know? And the businesses that are for sale at the moment, are you finding since I guess the pandemic, probably, you're finding there's a lot more for sale? Are people really jacking in with the businesses, or is that...
I have to say, yet? I've been quite impressed with the Mallorca business community. A lot of them have just knuckled down and got on with it. I thought I would actually be getting more people phoning me up wanting to sell businesses. And I think a lot of people have, you know, they've managed to diversify the business model. People in the marine industry, for instance, you know, they're actually busier than they were last year because the boats weren't going out. And, you know, they've had more work on now because, you know, they couldn't be chartered and, you know, they were working all through last year. You know, even, you know, the hospitality industry, you know, that's been the hardest one hit. But this, you know, they're still doing takeaways, they're still doing limited hours. You know, the owners have, they've had to, unfortunately, reduce, some of them have reduced the number of staff, but they're still turning over and they're still working and they're still making money.
I guess we'll see. I mean, people who don't live in Mallorca, I mean, the obvious thing is that people know that lots of businesses are the bars and the hotels and things. People don't appreciate quite so much how big a sector the nautical industry is, with its, you know, the crew, but also the composite businesses and the sail makers and the rope maker and all the rest of it. But it is actually huge, and mostly they're foreign-owned businesses, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, the marine industry is mainly, you know, it's... There's not as many, yeah, there's more, I would say, Brits and Australians, and it's a very English-speaking industry. And you know, as you were saying, I mean, there's a bar I know of that sort of caters for yachties, as they call them. Yeah. And their takings have actually gone up in the last 12 months, not gone down. so I don't know whether that's everyone's drinking more because of the coronavirus, but it's not affected that bad.
Obviously, probably wrong, because the crew didn't go anywhere. They stayed in Parma spending their money in the bar.
Well, yeah, that's probably one of the reasons as well. But you know, they've done quite well. And you know, there are building companies, construction, they're still doing well. Mm. You know, I've got, you know, there's an audiovisual business I've got that do smart homes.
A smart home.
Yeah.
Go on. I don't know what a smart home is.
A smart home is a home that basically everything is controlled by your iPhone, effectively, or your iPad. You can turn on the lights, the heating, the TVs, everything from your car outside and everything else.
Long time before that happens in my house, I think.
I'm saying nothing as I look around. No, but, you know, he's doing an amazing amount of business.
Yeah, big luxury properties here, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, because it's now, you know, all these houses want cassette cabling, they want secure internet across the house. They want, you know, and it's they've got these in the houses in London and wherever they're living. So they now want it in the holiday homes as well. And he's just actually recruiting. I was speaking to him only this week, and he's actually recruiting two more people.
Right.
So he, you know, he's growing his business even in these times. So it's there is, you know, people are still spending.
So we've got a picture of a very diverse bunch of businesses. Some are doing well, some are not doing well. Everyone's trying hard.
Everyone is trying. Yes.
It's basically, I mean, right now in February, there's a lot of hope in Mallorca that we'll get some sort of holiday season this year. But I think with every passing day, it's looking less and less likely for various different reasons. So I guess, and people are talking about a second season, a second poor summer for the hospitality industry being a little bit make or break, that people could survive the first one, but actually it is going to get more challenging for the second one. So I guess you may see one or two more in the hospitality business.
I think it depends on what level or what market you're going after. I think, you know, let's be honest, that, you know, places like Magaluf, Playa de Palma, Alano, the mass tourism destinations all had a bad year last year because they couldn't, even the hotels could open.
Yeah.
What people don't realise is that the boutique, the hotel industry, that, you know, people spend 300, 400 euros a night, you know, 20 rooms, and there's a lot of them in Mallorca, there's a lot more
there
than
are,
hidden away. They all did very well because wealthy people still wanted to go on holiday
and go somewhere quiet
and go somewhere and quiet out of, out of the way. They didn't want lots of people, and you know, we've got we've got quite a few for sale, and you know, a couple of them are already fully booked for May.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's good. Well, that's some optimism.
Yeah. So I think. I think the way they're viewing it, and I work with some hotel chains as well, is that their clientele that have to travel for business, they're quite wealthy, they're sort of middle aged upwards, and the chances are they will be vaccinated by March.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, once you've got your vaccination, if what we're reading is true about a health passport, you can then travel, and then you can come here.
Yeah, some people taking a little bit of a leap, aren't they? But with some good information. I think a few holiday companies in the UK were saying, book now on the basis that you will have had a vaccine by the time you get to the summer, and if you haven't, we'll give you your money back. So the holiday firms and the travel firms are taking on that risk. So I suppose you're right, actually, that, you know, there is, at the moment, there's some hope. Anyway.
Yes, I mean, there's definite hope. And the people, you know, like I say, I get new inquiries every day. And you know, people do generally want to come here. You know, the hotel industry, I do speak with some relatively senior people because they're buying hotels. And they're quite optimistic. I mean, they think, you know, they're saying, you know, the boutique by June the mid to high end market will be back to normal.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, the mass tourism might take a little bit longer.
Younger people, I guess, isn't it? Mass market.
Yeah, the mass market, the lower end. But you know, I mean, you've got places like St. Elmo, for instance. Last summer, a lot of the places there did just as well financially as they did the year before.
Really? Right.
Yeah,
because the restaurants
and the bars, because their clientele is holiday homes, same as Port Andratx. Port Andratx was busy up till when the Germany changed the restrictions in September. But you know, a lot of the businesses there, they took exactly the same money in August as they did the year before.
And Port Andratx is just down in the southwest, around where we live, and it is a bit of a hotspot for the very wealthy second homeowners. And there really aren't. There's two hotels, but neither of them are very big. But you wouldn't call it a hotel resort, would you? But there's plenty of restaurants there.
There's a lot of
restaurants. They're all shut at the moment, but we're allowed back again.
Yeah, I mean, they're still open now, a few of them. You know, they're doing takeaways. And you know, I think the 15th, isn't it? I think they're talking. Maybe March the 1st, they'll be back open again. And, I mean, we were down there only when the places were open about a month ago. And Grand Cappuccino, which was busier like a month ago than it was in summer.
Yeah, definitely counters to the wealthy, that one, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you want to
15 quid gin and tonic.
I think 50 quid's a happy hour, isn't it? I think it's more than that.
Many Port Andratx residents don't bat an eyelid at 15 quid gin
and
tonic.
Yeah.
I don't get many of those out of my wages.
I don't drink gin and tonics and cappuccino, but you know, they were doing very well.
They were,
Especially the weekend. I think there were a lot of people coming in from Parma. You've got to remember, Parma still has, there's still 500,000 people living in Parma.
Yeah.
You know, there's over 1 million people living on the island. So there's trade there, you know?
And people who, and the residents here, who would often travel, go somewhere, actually think, well, I can't go anywhere else, I'll go and take my wages and spend them in Port Andratx or something.
Yeah.
There is economic activity going on, for sure. So, but if people are thinking about moving over here, I mean, talking particularly about British people, I know your clients are more varied than that. What hoops do they have to jump through these days, and how has that changed since Brexit?
Yeah, I mean, Brexit has had an unfortunate effect on that. It's definitely made things a lot more difficult, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. I speak with, well, there's a company called Majorca Solutions that work quite well.
We did an interview with Becky quite a long time ago, we know them well. So yeah, they're great, the paperwork company and
how would you
describe Majorca Solutions?
I would say they help doing all the nasty paperwork that no one particularly likes to do.
Yeah.
And admin and applying for your
queuing up
driving licenses and everything else. And they know how to navigate through the bureaucracy of Majorca, should we say, in getting that. And they've come up with a couple of possible solutions that allow people to move here. Because, you know, there is obviously the golden visa, you know, which is...
Just to backtrack, sorry, I mean, excuse me for pointing out obvious stuff. Pre-Brexit, or at least the end of the transition period, you could just get on a plane in Britain, get off here, and you're allowed to be here, right? And
pretty much. Yeah. I mean, you had to have...
You still had to go through some things to get a business, but you had the right to relocate.
Yeah, as long as you had, you know, I think 6,000 in your bank account, and, you know, you could prove your means. It was a very, very simple process. Yeah. You know, it was done in maximum 4 weeks.
Yeah, but since January the 1st... That is no longer a matter of right, is it?
No, you can't do that. So, I mean, there's various different visas you can apply for. There's a working visa, so you need someone to give you a job here.
I mean, from you as a person who sells businesses, you're talking about people who are going to come here and rent and start a business. So let's take a hypothetical person who wants to come over and buy a bar or something.
Okay, so what you can apply for at the moment, this is what we've got a few people going through the process, so it's still early ground because this is new. We don't know.
I suppose you're still finding a way through this
and it's new for everybody. But the process at the moment is you go to the Spanish consulate and apply for an entrepreneur's visa.
In the UK?
In the UK. And then you can come here and set up a company. Which register a company here.
So your entrepreneur's visa gets you here.
Yeah, gets you here, and you could say you want to set up an SL company, a limited company.
Yes,
I think the visa's £600 in the UK.
Do you have to demonstrate? Probably have to demonstrate things like healthcare provision and money in banks and all that.
Well, I'll come to that.
Okay.
All right. So then you come here and you set up an SL limited company, which is that, and then that allows you to get an NIE. yes, which is a tax number.
That's my identity number.
And then with that, in theory, you should be able to get a residency. But it's a little bit more complicated than that. But the guys at Mallorca Solutions are sorting out. But,
yeah.
I mean, there is, you know, I am speaking to, you know, I speak to a number of sort of immigration lawyers that I've used in the past, and I've got some that have got some relatively good contacts in, and they do think they are going to relax a little, but we can't guarantee on that at the moment.
I mean, we were talking actually before we started recording about Brexit and the various different smellies that people are finding as they're going through this, and you know, that actually there will be, it's likely that there will be renegotiations of various bits to make sure that people mutually benefit from it. So you're expecting some of the hurdles to smooth out a little bit.
I think,
or
you're
hopeful, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, I'm not taking the sort of staunch patriotic attitude that we're British and they'll have the letters.
No.
But, you know, I think we have to understand that, as you know, England does contribute quite a lot to the Spanish economy. Likewise, you know, there's a lot of Spanish working in the UK that are contributing to the UK economy. So it works on both sides for both our countries to try and come to a more amicable agreement.
Can Spain negotiate those temporary, you know, truces, if you like, separately from the European Union?
Yes.
They can, right?
Yes. Ironically, each country, even though it's part of the EU, can set its own immigration rules.
Right, okay.
So, there's
sounds like endless more complication, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's quite ironic that, you know, we won't go into the politics of Brexit, but Brexit was based on that, yeah. And but we could have actually just changed our policy anyway in the UK without actually leaving.
Let's not go down that.
But yeah.
So it's you know, you're painting a picture of a local economy here that is still, there's opportunities. I mean, well, we all hope this pandemic will go away sooner rather than later. It will be gone eventually. Mm. So you just have a few more hoops to jump through. But we have a thriving local economy.
Yes, I mean, it's doing well.
With on the horizon and lots of opportunities. So, I mean, if you wanted to give someone some do's and don'ts, you know, if you're... We've all seen, since we've lived here, those, maybe not so much recently, but those disasters where people have had the idea, they've watched Place in the Sun or something, and they've sold their house and jacked in their job and come and invested in some horrible business that they haven't really researched properly in a sector they've never worked in before. And, you know,
I mean, yeah, I think the thing is, when you come out, I mean, obviously be prepared to work. I mean, I see you know, lots of different types of businesses. I sell lots of different types of businesses, and the ones that are successful are the ones where the owners actually do hard work.
Yeah.
They're working every day, 7 days a week, just like if they had a successful business in the UK. You know, the temptation to sit in the sun and relax is there, but if, just like anywhere in the world, if you want to make money, you've got to work. You know, but it just so happens that we can do it with beautiful surroundings.
And you might have to work harder, actually. I mean, that was we definitely had that before we moved over, thinking we have to do whatever it takes. You're in charge of your own destiny.
Mm.
And I think we've worked harder than we ever worked in the UK, and I'm very happy to have done it. But it's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would say in the UK, you've got a bigger support network in terms of if things go wrong, like unemployment benefit and, you know, all those kind of things. So you do have to work. I mean, you're a little bit more on your own, but, you know, the rewards are there. There's lots of people that are.
I'm moving from being employed by a company to being self-employed here, and I've been more or less self-employed since I got here. And self-employed people don't go home at 5 o'clock.
No.
Or 6 o'clock, or even...
Having a business is a 24/7 thing, whatever business you do. You know, I think the top tips are find something that you like.
Yeah.
Do something that you enjoy. You know, and I always try and steer people in directions of business. In the UK, I was a business consultant. I worked in various startups and all sorts of, like, sort of quite high-end things and consulting. And I always try and direct people in a direction where I think they would, a business that they would suit them, if you know what I mean. Or I give them a selection of businesses which I think would suit them and suit their personality. I mean, if someone's very quiet and you know, introverted, you're not going to want to have a bar in the middle of Magaluf on the Punta Ballena. You've got to be sensible.
I mean, if you ran a bar in the UK, then maybe come and run a bar here, but do your homework. But if, you know, people do, you know, the stories of people who used to do something completely unrelated coming in, not only moving to a country they don't understand, and a system they don't understand, but also a job they have.
I think, you know, you can do it. People do make lots of career changes, you know, but I think, you know, as long, you've got to sort of be sensible, research it. I mean, now, you know, 20 years ago, I mean, I know my family had been here a long time and people would come and go. And now we have this thing called the internet. You can look things up a lot easier, you know. So, you know, whatever industry you want to go in, you can see what works and what doesn't. And you think, you know, generally, I mean, the businesses, but, you know, most people come here, if they work hard, the businesses will be successful.
I think being aware of the seasonality as well, even if you, I mean, obviously, if you've got a bar on the beach in Magaluf, you've got a season, but actually almost every business here has a season of some sort. Mine does, and I don't work in tourism. You know, boats have them, real estate has them. You know, coming here in the winter, make sure you can hack the weather. Today it's glorious.
Normally it's very nice.
But knowing that there will be a quiet bit and making sure that you save your money in the summer if you're going to have a quiet winter, that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think there's a lot of common sense you have to have.
Common sense is really important because sometimes people leave that on the plane.
I'm going to be very careful.
We both
lived here a long time. We've seen people come and go. You do have to be sensible about what you do, and you know, when you rent an apartment in summer, make sure it's, you know, you're going to be able to heat it in winter because otherwise it's going to be very cold.
We lived here in 2004, and it was the period from before 2004 and up until the financial crisis of 2008 was still the boom time, if you like. And people were, you'd watch bars or little seasonal businesses change hands every year sometimes, because people would come out, go, look, I'm going to have a bar here, I'm going to do this, and then not do their research, or as you say, put their feet up and start drinking the profits a little too early. And then that would close down at the end of the season, and then another, you know, family would come out with their season, their life savings for the next season, and so on. 2008 stopped all that. Stopped people coming out. And I think since then, probably, well, you'll know more than I do, people have been a bit more sensible.
I think generally people are a lot more conscious of the money that they spend now. I think money's harder to come by now, to be honest.
I think
that's why people are a little bit more sensible. Thankfully, I don't see many of the businesses that I sell failing because people, you know, they are prepared to work. I know the type of person because obviously I'm coming here a long time because my family's been here and, you know, they'd get their sort of, they'd been made redundant and they come and buy a bar for 15,000 and think they could feed a family of 10. Yeah. If you buy a business for 15,000, the chances are it's not going to be able to feed a family of 10 people. Because you need to be making, you know, a business that makes 50, 60,000 a year. You do have to, if you want to, a good business, you do have to be prepared to spend, you know, some money on it, basically.
Well, people don't give away businesses mostly, do they?
No.
That's the other dog sneezing now. Can't escape them on this podcast.
I've got businesses that do turnover, you know, that turn over well over $1 million. You know, but they're not on the market for €20,000.
No. There's been a lot written recently about a lowering of the average age of people coming here. That actually back in the day it was people coming to retire or people who after their kids had left home, and over the last 10, 15 years or so, people are actually starting to come younger and younger with younger families or, you know, that kind of stuff. So you've seen that yourself, or maybe that's not affecting what you do?
That's an interesting. I'm trying to think about that. I suppose the thing is that my target audience tend to be people 30 plus.
Yeah.
I would say people that have worked a bit back home, you know, they've managed to accumulate a pot of money where they can afford to buy a business. You know, because it's, you know, you don't just leave university with, you know, 50,000 euros in debt. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it tends to be people that are looking for a life change. You know, they've done the first part of life, which, you know, we've all done, left university, you know, worked silly hours. And you know, it tends to be people looking for some kind of change in their life or quality of life.
Sounds like you're talking about me when we moved here, actually.
I think it was myself as well, to be honest.
34, I moved here. 50 this year. We're not.
Yeah.
Ooh. So that was avoiding a midlife crisis.
Is that true? I'm sort of saying you don't look it.
Thank you very much. If only that were true. Great face for radio.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. So, well, I think you've given us everything we need to know there. So, how do people get in touch with you if they want to buy a chippy in Magaluf? or a hotel or a nautical business or whatever.
We have a website, it's greenpointcp.com. You can contact me through there. And we have a Facebook, Instagram. You can contact me through all the social media, LinkedIn. We're on every platform going at the moment, because you have to be. Mm-hmm. But it's quite exciting. Social media definitely helps, you know, it definitely helps with the business. You know, I think, you know, one of the things that, I suppose one of the things I should mention when people do come here is, you know, I am an ex-business consultant. You know, I do advise people how to set their business up and run it, and we take them through, you know, the whole process. So I don't just go, here's the keys, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we do sort of, I'll introduce you to, you know, introduce you to networks of Hester's and everyone else. So, you know, all the process goes nice and smoothly.
Yeah. I guess you must be spending a lot of time doing Zoom meetings at the moment with people in the UK about, because when people come over and buy a business with you, they also want a driving license, and they want to have this, and they want to find a place to rent, to, you know, somewhere to put their kids in school, and all of that stuff. So you help people out with that?
Yeah, we do all of that. Yeah, we do all of that. We introduce you to the right people, so it all works nice and smoothly. So, you know, it allows them to transition in as easily as possible at the moment.
Perfect. And you're a busy man.
Yeah, we are quite busy at the moment.
Good to hear it.
So, hopefully we'll, you know. Ireland opens up again, we're going to be busier.
Great. Well, look below for the link. We'll link to Richard's business there. If you want to get in contact with him, click there. Meantime, thank you very much. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that was better news than I was expecting, actually. Good. That's good news.
Yeah, I know. Actually, it's interesting to hear about the diversity of stuff going on here. You know, it's even as someone who's lived here for a long time, It is interesting to hear about all the diversity and the bits that are doing well, the bits that aren't doing so well, and the grounds for optimism. So thanks very much, Richard. You know, if you want to go and buy yourself a business, talk to Richard.
You know, my top tip about for moving to Mallorca.
Go on.
Learn Spanish.
Yes. It's always going to help, isn't it?
No, you absolutely have to. Otherwise, you're always going to be vulnerable in any kind of circumstances. You must learn to speak Spanish.
And arrive here with a work ethic. As we mentioned in the interview, don't expect to come here and put your feet up.
No.
Or if you do, expect to go home with empty pockets here later, possibly. Hustle. Unless you're very lucky, of course.
I don't think we've ever stopped working hard, though. But as long as you're doing something that you enjoy.
I think that's a good tip, actually, because we work harder than I've ever worked when I was back in the UK, but because I do something I enjoy, I mean, it still feels like work, but it's good to do. Who was it that said, if you do something you like, then you'll never work a day in your life?
Don't know.
No, completely wrong, but it's general. It's a general sentiment in the right direction.
But it's with hard-working, honest types, sorry. Unlike that bloke in Barcelona.
It's not the bloke in Barcelona. It's Luis Barcenas.
Oh, Barcenas, sorry.
Which has raised...
I thought he was in Barcelona.
No, he's Luis Barcenas. Who is was the treasurer of the Conservative Party, the PP, Partido
Popular. Hang on a minute. So, another dodgy politician, shocker.
No, this is the same dodgy politicians, but they're about to get a trial. He, back in 2014? Oh, no, actually, it was before that.
Why did it take so long for these people to come to justice?
I know. He was, Mariano Rajoy was the Conservative Prime Minister.
Yes, I remember him well.
He was
vote for me!
A bit boring, wasn't he? Anyway, he was a Conservative Prime Minister, and the treasurer of his party, Luis Barcenas, it turns out was keeping a little cash account somewhere where backhanders and bribes and just general cash payments were going completely under the books.
But he had a bank account for them.
Offshore.
Or a box.
Offshore. And it had kickbacks and, you know, grease my part. And off it went. And obviously the tax man didn't know a great deal about this either. Mm. And El País, one of the national newspapers here, actually, they found these handwritten records.
Oh, with that guy.
Yeah, with Mr. Rajoy, the Prime Minister's name, amongst many others, written into this. And they put it right on the front page. And Rajoy, of course, denied it. And everyone said, well, how come that? Then he went, well, I just don't like it. Shh, go away. And it ultimately really led to his resignation.
Where is this chap? He's in Madrid, I guess.
He's about to come to trial, albeit 7 years on. And
Why does it take so long?
It always takes so long. Yeah, unfortunately, it always takes really long, and then they seem to dismiss them. So nobody ever seems to...
Because it takes a lot of guts as well, I think, to to take this stuff to trial, because yeah. a lot of people get a bit heavy, don't they?
I mean, he already has been sentenced, but this is the trial of, this is the beginning of the bigger trial of the Gürtel case, it's called, which is, Gürtel is an enormous corruption case that's been rumbling on for probably about 15 years that's ended up even involving the royal family, if you remember the jailing of Iñaki Urdangarin.
Is this the Palmer Arena one? Same thing?
Lots of these.
Connected.
They all end up, yeah, this web has a lot of tentacles, if that is a spider and octopus.
I would like to read a book about it or some big article. Mm. Can you recommend anything?
Just keep reading the news. I'm sure there will be plenty of books, or maybe even a movie, actually. Mm. So anyway, he's about to go on trial next week.
Good. Well, we can tell the listener about it when.
Yeah, and there's more revelations come out about illicit and dirty payments. So this is going to be a big story in Spain. In fact, I can't believe it's gone away, but it will be back on the front pages again, and we will no doubt find out about just how crooked all of these people were back in those days. In fact, former Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy and José María Aznar, who was also a PP1 but a long time before that, are both going to be as witnesses on this, but you'd think they would be accused. I don't know.
Mm.
Aznar was a strange man.
Yeah.
He looked a bit like one of the Super Mario Brothers, with a giant bushy moustache at the time. And he actually did at one point claim that it was a secret to his powers. His giant tash. Yeah, he did.
Speaking of crimes.
Crime.
Ooh, nice. A crime against television is back on the BBC.
Are you being a bit harsh now?
Yes, I am.
This is series two of the Mallorca Files.
It's nice to see Mallorca on the wall.
And this is coming from someone, you, has an unbelievable appetite for trash TV.
I love trash, but it's really
How come you don't like this trash?
It's just a bit clunky.
The Mallorca Files is a
daytime television.
Yeah, but you like Midsummer Murders.
Yeah, but that's different.
You'd rather have your crime in a Cotswold village rather than the island you live on.
I like Midsummer Murders. I can watch it all day and all night.
You
know what I watch when I'm really feeling a bit sad? Back-to-back Harry Potter.
Okay. Let me finish this. This is the Mallorca Files, which is rubbish telly, mostly. But it is set in a lovely location. They did a first series. It's daytime TV. It involves a British female detective and a German male detective with all the appropriate chemistry involved, solving crimes and despising each other, but slightly flirting with each other in that straight-off-the-peg kind of writing kind of way. And it's set in some of the nicest bits of Mallorca. They go running around the Sóller train and cycling up Sa Calobra. And they leg it around the old Hannah Palmer. And the Consell de Mallorca has actually published a map for those that are interested. Guide that show you where you can see these things. I've filmed a few of them around here. Actually. I mean, it's designed to appeal to a lot of people. It's British drama is very popular with German TV watchers.
Is it? I didn't know that. And
the Germans really like Mallorca, as do the Brits. So it's kind of it's off the peg design for these kind of markets.
It ticks all the boxes.
So it does daytime TV in the UK and presumably the same in Germany as well. And it's a lot of very weird storylines. I watched one before I went, oh God. And it was about it was kind of like there was a talent show, like Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah.
And you know the way that they go, and I watched British Got Talent once as well. They went to Andrew Lloyd Webber's villa in Well, they had
like the narrowing down process.
Exactly. Well, they dramatised that where they went to effectively the German person's.
Was he sitting in a big chair?
He was, and then one of the maybe this is a spoiler. If you haven't watched it yet. And then one of the contestants got a gun and held everyone hostage so that he could sing live on telly.
That's quite a good one, then.
Maybe we'll give it a go now.
I will now,
There we are. So that's Mallorca Files. Some people love it. I'm not that bothered. But it looks nice anyway.
I've been getting a lot of messages from friends in the UK wanting to know where this, that and the other is. So it is definitely working as a... It's an advert for our island.
Yeah,
which is nice.
Well, it is good, and
just,
it is.
Just don't,
The star of the island, the star of the thing, is Mallorca.
It is
not the acting or the writing,
which is a shame. But
it is a bit.
It's lovely to see it.
I know. That's a lot, I think, for now, isn't it? What are we doing next time?
I don't know. What should we do?
We'll figure it out. Thanks for joining us. That's episode 18. It's a wrap. Thanks to Richard.
And, by the way, my name's Vicky McLeod.
Oh, yeah, we didn't do that. I'm Oliver Nielsen.
And we are surrounded by pets.
who want their dinner.
Been quite well behaved.
I know. And I'm going to go and switch on the washing machine.
You can turn everything on now. That's noisy. You've still got another half an hour. No, sorry, hour left of happy hour.
Perfect. See you next time. Oh, nice. Heat is on. Bye.